Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. This is Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations, a podcast to continue that conversation. Every Tuesday on Clubhouse at 12:55 p.m. Eastern, we have amazing discussions with brilliant people at the intersection of tech and theater.
And we always walk away from those Clubhouse talks with a lot more thoughts than we were able to get to during that hour. So we decided to share those and reach even more of our friends and collaborators through this podcast. And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesday. Ooh, this is a good one. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about two articles, actually. We spent like a full half hour on both of these. One, the WGA, which is the Writers Guild of America, referendum on feature film screen credits. For writers, there was just an amazing Deadline article that outlined the issue and opinions from both sides. We'll talk about that in a second. It was such a good article. And we also talked about Broadway merchandising, why the model exists the way it does and where there's room for improvement. It was like perfect. It was the perfect couple of articles for the people that came to our room because we had a theater writer with us and we had a Broadway merchandising entrepreneur with us as well, which we did not know was going to happen when Lucy picked these articles. I thought that was really exciting.
Can I bring back my argument for inviting guests specifically to the content that we're trying to talk about or read about or whatever about?
I never said we couldn't invite specific people, that's for sure. It actually, I was saying this to Joe in Slack, but, you know, as we've refined what our Clubhouse room is across the last, whatever, 10 months, and just sort of gotten our groove down as a unit of people and all the folks that come and join us really often, you know, the next step for us is how do we get folks in from outside the theater? Because I think that's where the real gold is in Clubhouse. Actually, to the point that Anand made today during Clubhouse, the emotional connection to Broadway is really strong for people outside the theater as well. And I was thinking today, particularly around these conversations, about like how awesome that conversation would have been with people from the tech industry and from the film and TV industry, because the perspective from theater makers in a non-theatrical setting is so interesting. And like, it just, I can imagine those conversations would be really cool. And it made me imagine a world in which we actually have sort of an invite-only cohort of theatrical creators and business folks and all of that stuff. You know, our friends from Marquee and Anand from Broadway Boxed Up and Laura from Uproar and SJ from iHeartRadio Broadway, who are sort of like all the theater people who are always invited to be up on stage with us every week, while a bunch of people that aren't from theater come to join our conversations and get into these. I think it's really exciting to like center theatrical perspectives and conversations with the larger public, because our collaborative nature has equipped us to ask good questions, to disagree, to dissent with each other. And I think it's like a really exciting potential future for our Clubhouse rooms.
I like the idea too of like, we talk so much about theater being slow to pick up other trends or other changes that other industries have adopted already. So mm-hmm. there's so much to kind of, it feels like easily learn from other industries. Like we had someone in, you know, merchandising for film and like, you know, Disney or Universal or whatever, any of those big studio groups, like they have huge merchandising departments that think about this all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm sure they're light years ahead of Broadway. And so to be able to have perspectives from people who actually like know what they're doing, know what they're talking about, and that get their opinions on like, oh, well, how do you deal with the fact that it's a huge upfront cost to do this? And it's like, oh, it's a different world. We have lots of budget. That doesn't matter. That's interesting to know. Or it's like, here's how we deal with that fact that we don't want to lose money, but we, you know, are risking a lot by putting an investment in building physical merchandise.
What I love about that then is it then feeds the like incentive for forward-thinking folks across theater to be part of our onstage cohort, right? Because we invest, like we're basically saying we're putting our bet on you because you're thinking differently about the theater industry, you're revolutionizing, you're making things that will make theater more valuable in the future. So we're inviting you to have a voice in our conversation each week. And in return, you have access to all these like amazing ideas, right? And connections and networking, like on our stage and in our room. Like that's the future of Clubhouse, our Clubhouse talk that I want to see.
Digital connection meets physical connection.
I love it. And ideas, lots of good ideas exchanged.
I was looking a bit into Creative Goods.
Do you want to explain who they are real quick?
I don't fully know how to explain creative goods yet.
Do you want me to explain why we're talking about them?
Let's do that. Jess, could you just give a quick explanation of what creative goods is?
Yes, we talked today, as I was mentioning earlier, about this concept of Broadway merchandising, because this deal is sort of been inked with a company called Creative Goods Merchandising. They're making merchandise already for Broadway shows, but they've launched a new program allowing theatergoers to purchase that merchandise from their seats at a theater via QR codes, basically. It's called the Curtain Collect program, I guess. And I think it's called that because you buy from your seat and pick it up afterward. Did I do a good job?
Amazing. I couldn't Thank have you. Even approximated that description. And in like researching, and I joked on Clubhouse that I was quiet because I was building a business model to expand into the Broadway world. But I was like, yeah, thinking about like, oh, how could this work if some, you know, upstarty sort of entity or organization could pitch the various producers and various theaters to work with them and say, hey, I will take on that financial risk, or I will take on whatever it is that these entities that currently are not making the decision to expand their merchandising efforts are not doing it, and be like, hi, I will do that part. Mm-hmm. And all you need to do is just like say yes, like just give me the right to do that and you will get X percent of all of my profits. And I was like, why doesn't this exist? And like, is this what Creative Goods is actually doing? And if not doing yet, but like what they're angling for? Because it seems like this is one very small kind of easy thing that they can introduce, like, right, scan mm-hmm. a QR code to purchase. It just changes the point of transaction from in the theater, like lobby, where it's a little bit, you know, you have to wait on a line that kind of stinks, to now doing it from my seat, maybe when I'm a little bit closer to making the purchase mentally and emotionally, and mm-hmm. a line maybe would prevent me from actually wanting to do that or finalizing the purchase. But it's not like super innovative in the sense that like it's pretty simple idea. Mm-hmm. And what effect will it have on sales? I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully it helps sell more merchandise. But are they angling for like a bigger take or a bigger expansion of what merchandising for Broadway shows is? I'm curious if you have an opinion on that.
I think I have a question. So to do something like what you're describing, am I correct in thinking you'd really have to be a startup with venture backing, because you would need the capital to license all of that IP, because you as a third party would need to do all the production on it. Because as we talked about in Clubhouse today, this is the problem with like Broadway shows that have no idea if they're going to have a commercial run that's viable or not. And if you have to do all the production on it, you have to like have the licensing for everything, which is so crazy expensive, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure where the line of licensing actually comes into play. That's like a huge, you know, dark spot in my knowledge and understanding of things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was thinking about like just sort of the capital and equipment. And if I have as a company, like preferential relationships with manufacturers and distributors and all of these things that, you know, where economies of scale really come into play, if I'm doing more, it costs me less.
Yeah.
And if I could then aggregate the demand across all the shows and the winners help to offset the costs of the losers, and it creates a functioning ecosystem.
Yeah.
Kind of like the VC world, where it's like, yeah, whatever 10% of investments from venture capitalists are actually what are returning their fund, versus like those, you know, 80 or 90% that are not being successful and not returning funds.
I have an idea. Because another thing, you were talking about the limitations in the theater with merchandising. Another interesting limitation in thinking about this third party idea is that it's space, right? You get one little wagon kiosk and you can only have what you can store in that wagon kiosk in the theater, because that's just shut down with a curtain overnight. So they've got a couple t-shirts hanging, right? A couple piles of like programs, buttons, whatever it is. So if you could also outsource the delivery of it at the end of the show, like you also change the structure of what's possible with this, because you don't have the real estate issue anymore either. Like you warehouse it offsite, come in with a pop-up cart or whatever, you know, like ink a deal with the theater to park outside. So then I had an idea. I've decided we have to get a deal with an app that people already have on their phone. And then we put little, what were those things, beacons that Apple came up with that like trigger geolocation mm-hmm. notifications. So that way, like as soon as you walk up to Wicked, you get a notification from the Beacon that you can buy merch from our startup. And you can buy it while you're walking into the theater. Like, fuck those QR codes. You don't even need to get that far. And then you just meet the fun paddy wagon thing outside to pick your shit up afterwards. We're going to make $1 billion.
Do you think it needs to be at the point of, like, the theater that I get my thing?
I think that pursuant to what Ananth was talking about today in Clubhouse, there's such deep emotional connection that I think you want them to walk away with something in hand. Like, I'm remembering back to being, you know, a young kid whose parents had money to throw at all this kind of shit. And like, theater is so intangible that that's one of the reasons that people buy something at it, is because you get to walk away with something that holds your feelings, mm-hmm. basically, right? I don't think everything, you could definitely buy stuff that gets shipped afterwards, but I do think that having something, if you're going to spend money, is important. It's just my opinion.
Mm. Yeah. I'm going to make the pitch quickly for getting the thing a few days later. You know, maybe it's partnership with Amazon, it's next day, or it's a week later. And it's something like maybe a little bit more unique, because to your point of like the limited space to store merchandise leads you to products that are the most generic, for lack of a better word, the most widely appealing products. You have to like kind of lower the common denominator because you're limited by space and want to maximize the number of types of people that you might interest in your product. Mm-hmm. So if it was something like cool or interesting or different or new or unique, kind of like Ananth was saying, like the most unique and never been seen before products are the ones that move most quickly when they are released. Mm-hmm. But then it has the extra benefit of being like another touch point with the show or with the company or with the intellectual property, the brand of the mm-hmm. show that you just saw. Mm-hmm. That like you're thinking about it again, and does it expand the lifetime of that connection with that audience? Because mm-hmm. you know, you're in the theater and you use that connection that you were talking about to get the purchase initiated, right? That's the hardest part, is getting someone to actually lay out the money.
Yeah.
And then you have this kind of weird added benefit that a week later you're back in their head, you're back in their heart, they're back in their home, like physically with a product, and they're taking pictures of it, they're posting on Instagram, oh my God, I got my thing. The show is so great. Like, I either want to go back, or you should go see it, or here's a discount code, whatever. And it kind of extends the lifeline, the life cycle of that connection between the audience member and the show or the brand.
Yeah, and I guess in addition to your point, you wouldn't ever get rid of the physical pop-up, basically, in the theaters. You could always buy something you walk away with. But to your point that you were making, I couldn't help but think during our conversation today about, like, that's really the advantage at the end of the day of something like Marquee Digital in my eyes. It's something I've been talking about for 10 years with Broadway Unlocked, is exactly what you just said, that we talk to a customer twice as a Broadway show, a commercial Broadway show. Like, when you sell them your ticket and when they come to the show, I now know that's because shows don't own their audiences. So like, that makes a lot more sense than it did to me 10 years ago when I was like, what the fuck is even this? But that leads me to like, it's great to have a digital program and to cut down waste and all that good stuff. But the real benefit is you can keep talking to the person who came to the show, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, they could buy things during the show from the digital marquee. They could buy things after the show. They could buy things before the show if they were feeling crazy. Yeah, and just extend that life and that connection to that human.
It also, this is a weird thought I had during this conversation, and then I just had it again listening to you talk about how this could all work. I think there's a lot of stuff to be borrowed from the t-shirt and apparel, customized apparel on demand industries, right? Like Teespring, because that was a really cool innovation. And I don't know how it works on the back end, but basically where they don't produce an item until it is ordered, right? And which makes it way cheaper to do customized stuff. And where I think it falls down a little bit is like, to your point about the lowest common denominator kind of pieces of merch, of button, a t-shirt, blah, blah, blah. What we're talking about here and what we learned from Ananth today is that more creative, unique pieces move. That's kind of tricky in the t-shirt on demand model as it applies to Broadway, because that creative, unique piece for t-shirts on demand is I get to design it. Whereas with Broadway IP, it doesn't exactly transfer over cleanly. But if you could crack that nut too, so that you're not producing the stuff to your point, until it's actually ordered, like that would be huge for Broadway as well.
Yeah. I mean, to the point of that Netflix example in the article that Lucy brought up for us today, like they have customization built into the way that that site works. What's Netflix.shop, providing more free advertising for Netflix, which they just really need, desperately need. They're so struggling right now. But it's like, it's this brilliant, it makes it feel like cooler to me because it's customized for me. But to your point, because it's custom, they can justify it taking a little bit longer or only running the things that they need to produce that are already making the money, as opposed to investing up front on 100,000 t-shirts that maybe nobody buys and you're at a loss. So it's like kind of this positive double-edged sword for them. They're like, people are more interested and engaged in, you know, putting stupid little like sunglass stickers on top of this t-shirt to make it like custom for them. But then they benefit from the fact that, oh, they will only produce that shirt if someone has purchased it. Like there's no risk associated.
I just had like this, what if, here's what I was just thinking of. I was thinking of with Teespring, for instance, when Trump called Hillary, what did he say to her during the debate in 2016? Nasty woman. I was so mad that I like immediately went on Illustrator, designed a Nasty Woman t-shirt with like a skull and crossbones that said like established 2016. And I put it up on Teespring and I made so much money, you guys. I made so much money and I had people from around the country sending me photos of them wearing this t-shirt and tank top. And it, you know, it only sold for, someone got a trademark on Nasty Woman 3 months later or something like that. And so everything was taken down. But my spin on a thing that was in the collective consciousness, right, was like so fun for me to make, made me money, and like went out to all these people. And I like, what if that was part of the IP strategy of this too, right? Like that you like whatever, I don't know what the lines are with Broadway shows and IP, but like to allow people to design their own stuff, their own takes on that and make a little money off of it as well. Ugh, that would be crazy because Broadway has such a devoted fandom, you know, much like Netflix, like, well, Netflix properties like Sex Education or whatever, whatever.
Yeah, no, I love that idea too. Instead of it being the generic merch, it's inside jokes that come out of the show's run.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can't obviously predict what those are gonna be.
I think this is super interesting, and I'm really excited. It's funny with Anand, who we met through Clubhouse, who has a startup called Broadway Boxed Up. He comes on stage a lot, but we've never actually gotten to talk to him about his business, and I want to have him on our podcast because I thought today was really fun to find out a little more about what he's aiming to do. I feel like we've just gotten it in little pieces, you know what I mean? And he's a smart cat. I'm excited to hear more about his company.
Yeah, maybe his company is branching into becoming that behemoth that gets all the rights to the Broadway and off-Broadway shows.
Another episode in Joe and Jess give everyone a business idea.
Yeah, we should start just asking for 0.01% of all companies that start because of this.
Yeah, that's true.
It'll be like those WGA contract changes, which is anyone thinking about anything as it relates to a script gets credit.
Yeah. Oh man,
that's a very unfair portrayal.
Very unfair. That was an interesting conversation, and y'all, I think you all know this if you listen. You can always go to our Twitter at BWY Unlocked to see the news articles that we talk about each week. And this week we talked about this WGA proposal for more writers. Anyone who made a literary contribution to a movie to be included in end credits. And and to your point, Joe, about anybody getting credit, I'm still stuck on, I don't really know what this does at the end of the day, other than IMDb, I guess, but you can make an IMDb entry without it being in the end credits. It just has to get approved. You know what I mean? I don't know. And maybe it's approved through credits. And that's why this is, I actually had never really thought about how it gets approved. But I don't know. And like, who cares if you wrote something on a movie? Who cares if you get a credit for it? It's going to be one of 1,000 credits that's not on the same line as the head writer. I've gone back and forth about what I think about this, but this is where I'm at currently.
Yeah. I kept finding myself thinking while reading those articles or reading that article and then during the conversation today that I was like, what is the problem that like we're actually trying to solve here? because it feels like a heavy-handed solution to a very complicated problem that has no perfect solution. Like the perfect solution is like we live in a world where people are like respectable and considerate and understanding and compassionate and reasonable. But like that's not the world we live in.
Womp womp.
Where it's like anytime there are rules, they're going to be, you know, abused and gamed and whatnot. And that's kind of where my head started going with this. It's like, okay, if this rule now exists to allow different types of crediting across movies, how is it going to be gamed and who's going to take advantage of it? And is that going to continue to hurt the people that it was meant to help? Which like leads me again to the question of like, what are we even trying to do? Like, what is the purpose?
What in the world doesn't get gamed or abused or taken advantage of, right? Like, I think that's kind of the point I was trying to get at that I poorly during Clubhouse is like, just do it and start solving the problems as they come up. You know what I mean? Everything gets gamed.
Yeah. If the rule exists, people are going to figure out how to game the rule.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Natalie mentioned this, but like, let's say I'm a young writer in LA. I don't have a lot of experience or formal credits, but I'm really fucking good at my job. And I end up being brought in, to Andy's point today, seven writers down the line to rewrite a scene for whatever reason. And I fucking kill it. You know what I mean? I knock it out of the park. I don't currently get any credit on that movie in the end credits because WGA goes through a process of arbitration to decide who should have the story by and who should have the writer's credit, written by credit. And I believe those are the only two credits currently for writing, right? I think those are the only two. But if there's more, there's not many. And so I don't get a credit. Therefore, I have, to Jermaine's point today, I have ghostwritten something which does not help me get more work. And I think that's the problem we're trying to solve. But I think you're right on that this does not actually feel like it's doing much more than being performative and saying we're doing something about this problem.
Ooh, that actually transitions me into a potential hot take, which is like, is this the WGA just trying to like reinforce themselves as being valuable and important and problem solving? Because when I started learning and reading more about the arbitration process, I was like, oh, maybe this is the problem that needs to be solved. That like the arbitration process is costly and like, for lack of a nuanced word, stupid.
That was a real Jess moment. Thanks.
It's like back to the idea, like the perfect solution is in a world where like people who deserve credit get credit and people who are good at their jobs like get on other jobs and are, you know, lauded for the hard work that they do. But the current arbitration process, I think, is meant to solve that problem of like people who have power have it and people who don't. And here we are trying now to like intermix between the two sets. But I was, the example that you brought up before of like someone, you know, coming in seventh round of script edits and like really crushing it, but not getting any credit. Like in that room, if those people who have the money or the connections or the power to bring writers into various projects like the work that that person did, then they're going to bring that person into future and more different projects. Mm-hmm. So like there's like a capital that exists outside of the system that is currently mandated and controlled and arbitrated by the WGA that I think mm-hmm. the WGA is trying to like make more systemic or make more structured, because in any system that has a power dynamic, that power dynamic gets abused. And you know, maybe that writer who you brought up in your example like does a killer job and they just like abuse that person's sort of creativity, intellect, and like don't pay them enough or don't give them the credits that they somehow deserve and sort mm-hmm. of prevent that person from being able to go as far and as great as they want to, as fast as they want to. And like, is that what WGA is actually solving by introducing these sorts of things? Like all the sort of soft power dynamics that exist inside of any system? I don't think it's going to end up doing that. I think that those relationships and that power dynamic is going to continue to exist and be abused.
Yeah. And on the flip side of all of this, I did think about the way this article framed up the people who have like head writing, like the written by credits, the way they're looking at this. Someone in the article said, like, just because you added one thing to it doesn't mean you have the skill set to glue it all together. And I did catch myself thinking about like our work when I read that. especially when I'm directing something for us, which is like not, you know, that's an occasional show where like I'm actually brought on to put something together. And it's really similar in some ways and made me think about it differently, because like in the kind of shows that we create with organizations that have their own artistic structures, there are a ton of people who contribute to the ultimate story, we'll say, right? Like we don't have a traditional script in the same way, so it's a little different, but there's a story, a narrative that emerges in something I'm directing for us. And there's contributions from artistic directors and like executive producers at the organization and people, story producers on our team. Like I certainly don't do it all alone, but I also am frequently like taking all of those inputs and making sense out of it. And that's a whole different skill set than contributing one idea or a few like tie togethers of a narrative. And I caught myself even when I read that perspective being like, I'm on the side of the written by writers. Like, you know, you don't get credit for this because I'm the one who cleaned it all up and like made it a thing, like made it cohesive. That's my skill set. And that's why I get this big, huge credit. You know what I mean? Which I realize is like contentious and might make me sound like a dick, but it's true. It's what I was thinking about. And I think it's a piece of this argument that is valid, you know?
Do we just need more and more categorizations of contributions? Just an infinite number of things. Just add 10 more minutes to those post credits.
And what job does that get you, to your point that you were, I think that's what made me think about it. What does that do for you? I suppose if it was, well, if it was lumped into category credits that told you something about your contribution, that in turn helps you get that job again. But the way the WGA is proposing is just under literary contributions. That's the credit by, you know what I mean? Which, I mean, I guess puts you into a pool of ensemble writers, basically, where you can contribute a literary contribution and that's your job. It's basically like getting shoehorned into being a swing. Swings are amazing, but like once you're a swing, if you're too good at it, you never get to do anything else in the theater because it's such a skill set. And that's what this feels a little bit like, is like, oh, you're a literary contributor. You can come in and clean something up. But that means you're never going to work your way up to being a writer. I'm making a ton of, you know, assumptions, but I do think it's like a piece of this.
All right. If this rule goes through, my new life goal will be to get as many
literary
contributor credits.
I also love that my response to this article and this problem has been as all over the map as the article. Like I cannot decide what I think about it. I just think there's so many like pros, cons, bad things, good things about it. I feel like I've led a very confusing analysis of this issue.
I feel like this article and this sort of problem has brought up in me something that happens across a lot of these sorts of problems and or topics, like specifically topics that I am not personally like involved or invested in, right? I'm not a writer. I'm not of the film community. And my reaction always trends to, fuck it, let's just burn it all down.
Same.
And I was like, it's obviously not working. Let's just kill everyone.
Yeah.
And start over.
I love that shit.
Dear listener, if you would like a credit, you should hit us up.
Oh my God.
You can tweet at us to get that credit at BWI Unlocked and use the hashtag tech theater. Give me that goddamn credit. Share your thoughts.
Oh Lord. And then if you do tweet us for a credit, come join us next week. Every single topic we talk about each week is inspired by the articles we read and share in our company Slack and the people that join us on our stage. So join us on Clubhouse Tuesdays at 12:55 Eastern and join in the conversation. And until then, we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.